Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network. The Best Ever You Show is here to help you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products and businesses, real life stories. With this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. And now, here is your host, Elizabeth.
Well, hello everyone, and happy kind of late 4th of July. We were on the air before on Monday with our Good Morning Gratitude show, July 1st, but here we are on July 8th, and I hope you all had a wonderful, safe, and happy 4th of July. And let's see, we got kind of one of my pageant idols on here. I love Amy Gregorio. She's one of the most beautiful people I know inside and out. I just think she's outstanding. So I'm so glad she agreed on super, super short notice to come join me today. I know we normally do our shows on Tuesdays and Thursdays, but I've got a kiddo turning 18 tomorrow, if you can believe that. I don't know how my 28-year-old self has an 18-year-old kid, Amy.
I know. Where does the time go? I swear they're babies 1 minute and 18 years old the next. Congratulations, Mama. Way to go.
Oh, my gosh, that's just wild, though, that he's 18. So I'm so proud, but I'm taking a day off with him. And on Thursday, I'm going to be off, too. And it's going like crazy. The time is flying by before I take him to college at the end of August. So
where's he going to go to college?
He's going to the University of Maine.
Oh, wow.
And he's majoring in kinesiology. And we're just so proud of him. And
yeah.
It's cool. But it's interesting how you just cherish the moments. And so I've kind of got a really light schedule going on this summer. But everybody, big round of applause, even though I don't have like a radio applause. I think I might need one for Amy Gregorio. She's awesome.
Thank you.
Oh, hello. She's Mrs. Illinois International. And, there's so many things that you're going to find out over the next hour about Amy. She's got such a cool working past and mommy past and mommy present. And she donates so much of her time to this organization that we'll talk about here. But Mrs. Illinois International, let's talk about the pageant first, because
sure.
You are getting ready to compete for the title of Mrs. International. When is
I
that?
Am.
Where is that? What is that?
Yeah, absolutely. The Mrs. International system is a fantastic system. I've actually been able to watch it over the last 5 or 6 years because it's been here in Chicago. So I've been able to have friends come in that have been competing. I've had friends come in just to come and watch the pageant itself. It's normally in the middle of July the following week. Then the Miss and the Teen International pageants take place as well. So it's a system, though, that it honors married women from around the world. It celebrates the work that we're doing in our homes, out of our homes, and a lot of the work that we're doing in our communities based on the work that we're very passionate about in terms of platform. And so you're right, we have the pageants coming up. We have more than 70 women from around the world that are going to be arriving next week, and we'll start on Tuesday. The preliminaries are then on July 19th, which is a Friday, and the final night is on Saturday, July 20th. So it's getting really exciting, just knowing that I'm going to get a chance to meet some of these women I've gotten to know through Facebook. And all of them are they're just fascinating, and they're incredible in what they do. And I look forward to being able to talk with each other and to share a lot of what we're a part of and what we're doing.
Yeah, I have just a tiny bit of firsthand experience with that pageant as Mrs.
Yes.
Maine a few years ago. And I've got to tell you, I'm the biggest fan. It is
yeah.
so filled with integrity, and
absolutely.
It's not about whether you're the prettiest or the tiniest or the tallest or the skinniest or the cute. You know, it
right.
kind of throws that out the window a little bit. What do you compete?
Mm-hmm.
What do you compete for? What are the different categories and so forth? I don't know if it's changed or not. I don't think it has.
Yes, it's remained primarily the same. When we all meet up, we will have interviews on Thursday. And after interviews, then we will have on the preliminaries, all of us will then go on stage, we'll compete in fitness wear, and then we'll compete in evening gown. The following night, which is finals night, they will then select the finalist. I'm not sure. I think they're going to have 15. That's what I've been told. I'm not quite sure, though. But 15 finalists, and then what they will do from what I've been told, again, until I get to orientation, I'm not completely 100% sure on this, but they're going to have everybody, those 15 women, come out. They'll be asked two questions, one of which will be about their specific platform, what it is. And then the second question will be a follow-up question that pertains to the platform that they've been talking about. At that point, I believe they make another cut, and then the women will come out that have made that next, I guess, step, and they will compete in fitness wear and then an evening gown, and then there you have it. At the end of the night, they'll announce the runners-up and the new Mrs. International 2013.
Yeah, and
so it's exciting. I can't tell you, like, for like the last, I think, 5 or 6 years, I have been sitting in that audience and just watching it all go and happen each year. And it's very strange to know that I'm going to be on the other side. Now I'm going to be on the stage. But so many of my friends, and like you, have said it's a wonderful organization. It is deeply steeped in not only tradition, but in integrity. And friends of mine that have judged in the past have said the same thing. They've said they've come away from it feeling even more confident that everything is done correctly, it's done honorably, and that the women that are part of this organization truly have integrity behind them. So I look forward to it.
It's kind of like a little family that it just keeps growing and growing and growing. And, you know, and Mary Richardson and her husband are just phenomenal, and everybody who works for them and the pageant system and everything. It's just a really well-run organization. And what I wanted to take a moment to do is stop for a second to people listening who might not be familiar with pageants or this one, and really wholeheartedly explain what a platform is, because this is a platform-based pageant.
Absolutely.
And let's go for it.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's also very, I guess you could say, interview heavy. 50% of our overall score is based on 5-minute one-on-one interviews with each judge. And those interviews are particularly focused on our platform. And a platform is, for each of us, maybe it is either a cause or an organization that really calls to us. And we, most of us, have been involved with it for a number of years. It's something we dedicate our free time to, maybe even more than just our free time to. And it's just something that, for instance, my platform is CASA. And as a court advocate for children who have been abused and neglected, it's something I've done for 5 years. I do it not only as a volunteer and as an advocate itself, but I've taken it further in getting involved with other programs as a way of promoting it to other people out there, because what we know through CASA is that we need as many advocates as absolutely possible, because we don't have enough for the children that need someone to speak up for them. But on the same sense, the people who would step up and help these children out simply don't know about CASA. So there's a lot of work to be done, and so at least with my platform, the majority of it really is about raising awareness about what we're doing and why it needs to be done.
And, you know, the other thing that's interesting there, there's 70 women there this year.
Yes.
Everybody's there for their own reason as well.
Yes. We have some amazing women.
Yeah, it's always interesting. I think at this pageant, to see what people are donating their time to, or what they want to speak about, and what's their why. Like, what's your why? What's your reason for CASA? Why are you so involved with that?
I became involved with organizations even in college that were more focused on children. I was part of a YWCA program in Michigan that was called the UR Special Program, where we would go into schools and we would talk with school-aged children of 8th grade and under about child sexual assault, because if you don't know what it is, or you don't know what to do if it happens, therein lies a very big problem. So I started that, and then I went into the world of broadcasting. And for me, I spent over 11 years, 12 years, working as a television journalist around the country. And day after day, I felt like I was covering stories about horrific abuse and neglect. And if it wasn't about that child, it was about a case that was involving an adult that had been a survivor of abuse and neglect. And so over a while, you just start seeing that I'm writing this minute 30 story every night, and it's going out there, people hear about it. But that was as far as it was going to be able to go, was to tell the story. And so I decided to kind of do some research and figure out what I could put my time and energy into that would tackle that problem, would do more than just tell the story, but actually help create a new ending for that story. So I did my research when I was pregnant with my daughter and started really looking at it because I knew that I was going to be taking a step back from my career and thought I need to do something with what I've done as a reporter and I need to put it to good use. And so I did my research and I came across CASA and I thought this is the perfect way to get involved because it will use my reporting skills, it will use my writing skills, it will use my investigative skills to really serve the best interest of a child that has been removed from their home because of abuse and neglect.
Yeah. Now, you said something in all that, aside from CASA, you just said that when you were pregnant with your first child, you took a step.
My second child,
Your second child.
Yes.
It was kind of like I did. I was like, okay, baby number two, I'm staying home, you know, kind of thing. How important, let me rephrase this question. There's a lot of leaning in going on. But at the with the whole Sheryl Sandberg and Facebook and her book Leaning In and all this stuff.
Right.
How, and if this puts you on the spot, we can pass on this But how, and it's not a pageant question either. It's a really important thing for women because a lot of us aren't leaning in. We've leaned way out and we're staying at home and doing things from home, you know, like this radio show and Best Ever You and the things that you're doing. But you kind of got like a foot that's out. I call it a foot. My whole body isn't out the door, but I kind of got like a foot that keeps the pulse on what's going on in the world. What do you think of that? It's really hard to quit jobs, isn't it? And I can imagine because like you were at Fox. Was that
right? Right. I spent years with CBS, and then I was with Fox for the last 4 years, and I loved my job. I think I almost maybe did it too long. It's in my blood. Every time I hear a siren or an ambulance, I'm like, okay, what's going on? Who do I need to call? And I have kept my foot in there. I'll do things now and then. I still help do some training with law enforcement academies for how to work with the media and that sort of thing. But I knew, and I think when it comes to the debate of do you stay at home, do you keep pressing forward, it's hard because it really is difficult to try to have everything, but I think it really depends on the job. And for me as a reporter, it meant I was working every weekend, I was working every holiday. My schedule was never the same. I was getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning many times. I was getting home well past midnight on other nights or other mornings. And it worked well with one child because it was a little bit more containable. I could manage that and I could schedule that. But when you get two children and you have a child that could be sick or you have a child that needs to be taken to school, that gets really dicey. And I just thought, my kids are only young once. Like, I only get this time. And, you know, about a year ago, I was actually brought in for a long round of interviews. I spent 6 hours in interviews the first time around with the ABC affiliate. And number one station would have been such a coup to get, but when it came down to it, I had to go, gosh, I'm going to be working every weekend for the rest of my life. That means this year I'm missing Christmas. This means I'm missing, like, probably Thanksgiving because I'm low man on the totem pole. And all of this was going to start having to affect everybody in my household, and I just thought it's not the right time.
Well,
so maybe when the right time comes, I'll do it. But, yeah, it's I miss it.
I have a flag on a post outside my house.
I know, and I miss it. And I think all of us that have taken a step back, we do, because it is something we invested a lot of time into. But our families, to me at least, our families are so much more important at the end of our day and at the end of our lives. What we've done to help with these children is far more important to me than anything else. And that's also part of the reason why I decided to become a CASA. I knew I finally had the time to make the commitment. I wasn't going to be moving to another state like I had for so many years. And so I thought, okay, now is the right time. And if my husband and I kiss our kids goodnight every day, we, you know, hang out with them, we go to dinner with them, we play with them. You know, we also have to discipline when they're, you know, not behaving. These are all things that every child should have. And there are a lot of children who don't. And it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. So the kids, so it all ties in for you, just how important it is to just be there for kids.
And we all have our own stories. We all have, whether it's breast cancer, losing a parent to heart disease, you know, the national platform for Mrs. International as an organization is the Go Red for Women. And it's so important because we are women, and yet it's the number one killer of women. And it's a silent killer at that. And so I think if you can figure out what your gifts are and you can figure out what your talents are, figure out where your passion lies, put them all together, you can make a significant impact as one person.
Yeah, and not be working weekends and missing Thanksgiving.
Not all the time.
All the time anyway, yeah. Well, yeah, it's interesting to me, too, how fast the time goes, because I really can remember when my kids were 0, 2, 4, and 6. I had 4 car seats in the car, 3 strollers, lots of diapers, bags.
Yeah.
I mean, just craziness. And I can remember really being in tears some days going, I can't even take a shower, you know, kind of thing. And you know what I mean? I need help. Yeah, those. Sometimes you just got to be like, can somebody come here and let me sleep or do something? And
right.
I would trade sometimes to have that back again with them so tiny. Because it's just, you grow up now, they're all, you know, right now they're like, Mom, come up to the scale and look how much weight I've gained. I'm like, seriously, that's what you use
Good for you.
And then I'm itty bitty. I'm like 5'2", and they're all measuring themselves against me to get taller. And I'm like, okay, the little one finally got taller than me now. So it's wild how fast that goes. So
It is. And even when you look back, I know my kids love, like my son is 7 and my daughter just turned 5. They love to go through their baby boxes and look at their old umbilical cords, which to me are kind of disgusting. But they love to see like the old, like the little tiny bands that they would wear in the hospital and all of that, which I'm very lucky to have because I have a lot of friends that aren't as fortunate as I've been. But they love going back through that, seeing the little diapers they'd wear. And I feel like I don't even remember that time because it was such a blur and it happened so quickly. And I just really wish I could go back there because I remember thinking they were that small and kissing them over and over and over again. But I can't remember them being that tiny. It's just, it's mind-boggling.
I can't remember your kids being that tiny. I remember seeing you pregnant. Because you've just always been a pageant idol of mine, and I'm just like, oh, my God,
she's
the cutest pregnant person ever. I'm like, I wish I looked like that pregnant.
I think I was the biggest pregnant person ever.
Were horrible.
That second pregnancy with my daughter, I got really sick with this thing called pups, which you don't normally get with the second child. You don't normally get early in the pregnancy, and it's like kind of being covered with poison ivy. So I had it for 6 months, and they put you on steroids because we say it's god-awful. Because it literally is like torture. And so I'd sleep with ice packs on. I'd sleep with menthol, just anything to calm down the incessant itching that was taking place. And so those steroids, they helped. I think I put on at least 70 or 80 pounds with her.
I remember you being panicked. Well, not panicked, but you were like going, okay, how am I going to go back to being me here? Did you have to?
I was running out of clothes to fit. I was like, maternity clothes. That doesn't even work. And I was still working at the time. So it was interesting. But it was so worth it. And all I really wanted was for her to be happy and to be healthy. And she is. She definitely is a happy child. So everything worked out in the end. But it was an experience. That's for sure.
Yeah. Do you okay, so let's talk a little bit about fitness just for a minute.
Sure.
How do you – and then we're going to come back to your platform. I'm going to break it up just a little bit. And, you know, if you want to bring this platform back in throughout this, feel free to. We need to talk about that as much as possible because it really helps people and lives.
Yes.
And that's what Best Ever is all about. But I think there's a component to this where people really do, you know, there's a lot of moms out there, maybe pregnant people listening, and you just said 70 or 80 pounds. And,
absolutely.
You know, when you have a baby, 10 comes off and you're sitting there going, oh, wow, you know,
right.
60 I get to lose. How do you go about that? Because I know with my pregnancies, I gained anywhere from 80 to 100 pounds on most all of them except for one.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do to get that?
Well, I definitely wasn't one of those women that could just breastfeed and drop the weight. It just didn't happen. I remember even with my son, I think I was 4 months postpartum, and I still was kind of almost still in maternity clothes. And, I mean, I'll tell you, I was like a size 12. I don't remember what my weight was at that point, but it was like the breastfeeding didn't do anything for me in terms of that. I was just glad I was able to do it because that in itself is a challenge. And you almost feel like you're, you know, you can triumph if you can get that taken care of and get it done well. But with fitness, what I found was it was just having to show up. And you're exhausted. And you're taking care of this little child, and it can be overwhelming. And, you know, if they're sick, you know, all of that really affects, for me, it affected what I wanted to eat. It affected basically my energy level. So I took it a little bit at a time, and I just had to realize it's not going to happen overnight. And if it happens, great, I'll try my best. For me, I just really found that cardio, like just the cardio itself was almost a re-energizer. But it took a long time because I almost had to get in shape to get in shape, if that makes any sense.
No,
and
it does, because I've struggled with my weight my whole life. And just being a gymnast, I'm thicker and short. You know, I'm just tinier and thicker than, you know, 5'8 and really, you know, built tiny.
Right.
And so I get it. And I do that sometimes too, where you just feel like, you, especially as you age, because I'm about to be 44, you feel like you have to get in shape to get in shape. And you have to.
Absolutely. And there are people that are really dedicated and extremely disciplined, and God bless them. I'm not, you know. I mean, I can eat fairly well, but I'm never going to be perfect, and I'm not going to be able to pull that off. I just don't have that willpower to do it. And to be honest with you, I also look at life as, like, life is short. Do you really want to, like, live your life so disciplined? You know, you want to enjoy a little bit of life now and then. And so I've had to learn how to do a little bit here, a little bit there. And, you know, I think for some women it's tough because you either aren't near a gym or you don't have access to a gym, or if you're taking care of a child at home and they may not have the daycare type setting you want while you go and work out, you got to do it at home. So I've tried the P90X system and was literally so sore every time I do it. It would take me 3 days to be able to do anything else. But I've tried a little bit of everything, and I found it's just a matter of hit or miss. A lot of times it's just, I don't know if you, do you belong to a gym at all?
I do. You know, I think that's really good advice, what you're saying there. And hit or miss isn't negative. Hit or miss is kind of is more positive, I think, because you kind of find what works for you through maybe a little bit of trial and error. And I can tell you at 44, it's not the same as when I was 20 or 30 or 35 or even 40. And like for me recently, in the past year and a half, what I've been doing is I love green smoothies. I live on them. I absolutely love green smoothies. So I've changed my eating a little bit. But then also I found this ballet workout. And I joined a gym too, so I do my treadmill and things like that. But I absolutely love ballet. And there's
good
this ballet
you.
Workout by Element. It's I can't even remember the name of it. Maybe I'll Google it here. But it's, if you Google ballet and Element, this tremendous ballet workout comes out. It's just like a DVD you pop in, and it's an elongating instead of a gymnastic muscular building.
Right, the muscle building.
Yeah.
And for each of us, our bodies are different. And, you know, I have friends of mine that have really gotten turned on to yoga, and so much so that now they're becoming instructors. I've tried it. It doesn't have the same effect for me. There are other people that love giving spinning a try. For me, I have found that when I'm not really dedicated yet, if you go to a class, you have to go through the class. I mean, that's an hour. And if you do that for even like a month, they say, 22 days to make or break a new habit. If you stick with it, then within that month, you start feeling like you either want to go, or you realize when you don't go, you feel like, I don't know, more exhausted. You just don't feel as good. And so for me, I always say to each their own, whatever you enjoy doing. There's a class that at the gym that I go to that's called SWAG. It's called Sweat with a Groove. And it's like a hip-hop class. And we can't fit one more person in there. I mean, it's almost dangerous trying to, you know, but it's so much fun. He turns down the lights. He puts on, like, the strobe light, and he, you know, teaches us these really awesome dance routines. And you see all ages. You see all abilities. And we love it. And you can burn, like, let's say 600 calories in that class. And if you love doing it, you're going to keep doing it.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. Just find something that you love to do and stick with it. Mm-hmm. Because I got to tell you, I joined a gym, and I'm sitting there going, oh, God, not this again.
Yep.
But the first time you go in there, too, you're like, okay, here I am. You know, I'm going to run 8 miles and do all these weights and everything, and I'm the queen of, like, overdoing it the first time.
Then you have to survive the next week. But, you know, I think recently I met with a new trainer. I hadn't had a trainer forever and ever. And I walked into a new place, and before I knew it, he had me signed up, because what he did is he put me through an hour. He's like, let's just try this. And I swear, he, like, killed me for an hour, and I was so out of it afterwards that he was like, let's sign you up. We'll get you going. I was like, okay, you know, and I signed up for it in, like, half of my brain. And I came back, and it was really tough. I think I spent that week sitting on my seat heaters, like, as much as possible in my car, because it just felt so good. But, he's been great. I'm not kidding you. Yeah, it was like 90 degrees outside, and I've got my seat heaters on. But it was wonderful, and he's been really great at pushing me at an athletic level. And so for me, I'm back to when I was in high school and such, I was an athlete. So it's been fun to go back to doing like the wind sprints and the stuff that I used to do, and kind of feel like, you know what, I may be 40, but I can get this handled. I can do this, and to see results. It's, you know, and that's another thing I've always done is for every, like, when I was back, you know, right after I had my children, I would set a goal, like for every 5 pounds, I would buy myself a new sports bra, or for every 5 pounds, I would get a pedicure. And that way, at least I rewarded myself along the way instead of looking at the overall picture, which was so overwhelming. You know?
And that's better than gaining 5 pounds and buying bigger pants, for sure.
But do buy the bigger pants, because there's nothing worse than clothes that are too tight. That's for sure.
I agree. I totally agree. All right. So, and this is a big part of not only, you know, this is a big part of life. And I understand
right. It's
not, it's part of this pageant, but by all means, it's not, you know, the biggest factor in the pageant. And it's not
like you're not in a
swimsuit either. This is fitness wear.
It's fitness, and you have your choice of a two-piece or one-piece. It's all the same.
I did not rock
some
that.
People love the Lycra, some people don't like the Lycra. I'm not great in short, so you just have to deal with it. And I think the whole point of the fitness competition of Mrs. International, it's not who's the skinniest, who's got the best muscle tone. It's just a matter of being healthy. I mean, after all, our national platform is Go Red for Women, which means we want everybody to be heart healthy. And so that means you've got to take care of yourself. And for most of us, well, not most of us, but all of us are married, but most of us are mothers. We want to be around for our children. We want to be around for our husbands. And there's something to be said about being healthy. You feel better. You sleep better. You think better. You just overall perform better. And so you don't have to be the skinniest by any means. But there is something to be said about being physically fit.
Being fit, yeah. I had trouble in that area. I just did not, I did not look good in either one of those choices, one piece or two piece. I was like,
they're tough. I'm telling you, they're tough to pull.
I'm staging it anyway. Hi.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, you see like the little teens and the Miss contestants come out, and you're like, Nelsie, that's who should be wearing
that.
That's
like,
you know.
Exactly. You look good. I do not. But I'm sure you will do very well and be very beautiful. You're welcome, but you don't even need it. You're going to do great. Let's go back to your platform for a little bit and talk about being a national ambassador for CASA. What overall is probably the biggest challenge that you face being a national ambassador for that organization?
Well, we have a couple of really big challenges that we face, and one, of course, is funding. And that's just because this year alone, the federal budget cuts have meant that we've had a significant amount of funding that normally comes into CASA, that's been just wiped away. And that provides a lot of the training for our volunteers. It helps provide a lot of the programs that our volunteers are able to provide to children or to families. It's been very devastating. So right now, the lack of that funding that we've had is critical to us. We need to figure out another way around it. And the second would be then awareness. I think, as I mentioned earlier, we know that 90% of the people who would either get involved as a friend of CASA or as a CASA volunteer and advocate themselves, they would do so, but 90% of them just don't know about CASA. And so we need to reach out to those people and get a hold of them, because right now we know with CASA and with advocates and the children that we've got in our court systems, the child welfare systems, of every child that has a CASA or a child advocate speaking up for them, another 2 of those children don't. And those are kids that we know they're going to languish longer in the child welfare system. Chances are they probably will get bounced around to more foster homes than a child with a CASA. A lot of services that these children would need, be it developmental therapies, behavioral therapies, a lot of that may not take place for those children unless they have a CASA who is watching over them and is involved with everybody who's in contact with that child. And it's the only way that we have been able to find to make sure that these children don't get lost in that system, they don't fall through those cracks, and to make sure that they get a voice in court, because they can't speak up for themselves.
When I've been involved locally here through a few things, one called Youth Alternatives. One of the things that they do at their banquet, you know, their year-end banquet and maybe some of their fundraising events and so forth, is they bring back some of the children who've been through their system and have gone on to college or do amazing things. Do you have any do you have any stories like that of children? You don't have to mention names or anything, but is there anything comes to mind? Yeah,
exactly.
Anybody or anyone?
We had our CASA Gala this year. and they had a group of guys that were dancing that came in from Chicago. They came in and they performed, and a couple of those young men were children that were in the foster care systems who both had CASAs, and they did speak about that and how, you know, for many of these children, not only have they been let down in their homes by the way they've either been treated or not treated, and then they get put into a foster home or a group home, and sometimes just due to circumstances, they'll bounce around. And when they bounce around from a home, they typically will then have to also change schools. And that means they're walking into a new territory. People don't have their history. These kids many times have been left down time and time again. So for this person who was speaking, the guy who was speaking that was part of the dance team, what he was saying is, you know, he knew that this CASA was going to be there for him in spite of the change of social workers and changing of schools and of foster homes. That CASA was the one person he knew wasn't going to let him down. And I've heard that story so many times. We had another person, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago, I was actually emceeing the CASA benefit then, and they brought in a gal from Florida who was in college. She had won a ton of scholarships. She was just such a bright and very talented person, and she had survived the worst of the worst. This is a child who in Florida was, for whatever reason, allowed to go into a foster home with her brother, and there were already 12 other children living in this foster home, mm-hmm. and they were pretty much living almost like in a double-wide mobile home, or modular home, I guess I should say. They were living there, and the abuse that took place was so devastating that her brother will never be able to live on his own. He will always have to be in a group home or assisted living type of a situation. She was able to get out, but she said it wasn't until she had a CASA and the CASA got involved and saw what was going on in this home and said, hey, wait a minute, there is a big problem here. It wasn't until that CASA got involved that the whistle was blown and she was moved out of that home immediately. And it saved her life. And it probably did a lot of good for her brother as well. But, you know, now she's going to college, and I'm sure from what I understand, the last I'd heard from her, she was going to be dedicating her life to servicing and helping children that have been in the same type of situations that she and her brother were in.
How do people find those children? Are they already removed from, like, if someone from the state
right.
identified a problem
right.
and then, okay.
Absolutely. CASA stands for Court-Appointed Special Advocates. And we are actually appointed by a juvenile court judge to take on a case. So when a child has had to be removed from a home because of abuse or neglect, there's an emergency hearing, a placement hearing that takes place. And at that point, the judge will look at the case. And depending on how the county works, in my county, I'm in Lake County, that judge will look at the case. And if it's a complex one or one that he or she thinks really needs some additional eyes and ears on, then they will ask CASA to appoint a volunteer. And so then I, as a CASA volunteer, will be presented the case. I'll review it and decide to accept it or decide that maybe it's too much for me to handle emotionally, whatever the reason may be. It's very different for each person, but that's what will happen. They'll then assign the case, and then the advocate or the volunteer, we all have access to their medical records, their educational records, anything that has to do with that child. We have the rights to get our hands on it because we are literally just there to solely focus on that child until the case closes. And that's usually when they're either returned to the home or they are permanently placed up for adoption, or then even if they have to age out of the system. And so it can be a lengthy process, but at least they know that there's one person whose sole focus is making sure that the best interest of that child is handled.
Yeah. And this is for child abuse and neglect that's known and discovered. How many people do you think live in that and it's not known or discovered? And how do you have...
Yeah, it's somewhat mind-boggling. I know here in the United States that there are roughly, I guess you could say, there are 3.5 million cases of child abuse and neglect that are reported, which involve 6 million kids or so. Now, those are the cases that are reported. Of that, we have roughly 800,000 children that are confirmed to be the survivors of abuse or neglect. Again, this is what we know and what's being reported. To even try to estimate what's really taking place, who knows, because so much of this type of abuse and neglect, it's not done out in broad daylight, you know, and a lot of times, sometimes people, they see what may be abuse in your eyes may not be seen as abuse to somebody else. It just may be seen as strict discipline. So it's really difficult to have an estimate. I do know also that worldwide, it's a huge epidemic as well. 40 million children around the world every year abused and neglected. And it's just, it's astounding, and it's a staggering statistic, because something has to be done. Something has to be done on behalf of these children, and it's not going to be done fast enough in my eyes, but something has to get done. And you got to start with yourself then.
Right. Yeah. Well, I exactly. And what I really like about this is that you're doing your part to help.
Yep.
And that's
right.
That's where it starts. I mean, and I've got a book coming out called Percolate, and it's about, you know, it's signed with Hay House and all stuff, but it's kind of about exactly what you're talking about. And it's about just you individually percolating peace. In other words, mm-hmm. you're doing your part, and that's infectious.
Absolutely. It's the being the change in the world you wish to see.
In a good way.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where it's really important, I think, for all of us to kind of take a step back, take a step outside of ourselves and ask ourselves, you know, what do we get angry by? What do we get really passionate about? And then how can we better serve that problem or that issue? And to get involved, not tomorrow and not next week, but now, start doing the research, start putting together a plan like I know I had done. I knew that I was going to get started pretty quickly after I did my research. I'll tell you, with CASA, even the training we go through is a 36-hour training for most places. For us, it was like 40 hours plus, because we also did some court observations. The training of CASA was amazing. I was so excited to become a CASA, and then I went through training over a six-week period, and I was just even more in love with the organization, because you learn so much about these children, and you learn just what they go through, how it affects their brains. You understand how to handle certain situations with them. And even after the training, then every year we are responsible for going through another 10 hours of additional education. And through those different seminars and such, I've learned about, like, even complex traumas that take place with children. That would be when they either witness or are victims of violence or abuse over a period of time. It happens more than once. What that does to their brain, like biologically, it pretty much shuts their brain down, because they go in survival mode. And they're too young to technically be considered PTSD, but their brains go into that same sort of fight or flight mode, and they just stop developing while they're just trying to survive. And that's why we see a lot of these children will have developmental delays. It's because mm-hmm. they've been through so much.
Do your kids know? Are your kids aware? I know they're 5 and 7, which is, you know, it's a good age to be aware. Are they aware of what you
right.
do?
Yes, they're aware of what I do. You know, I keep it relative to the ages. And
sure.
they know that I'm a CASA. They know that I work with children who couldn't stay in their homes because they don't have a family like they have. And so I keep it very simple for them. Almost because sometimes they'll ask questions that I don't have the answer for. Like, well, why would somebody abuse or neglect a child? I wish I could tell you. You
yeah.
know, a lot of times we know it's because of substance abuse issues.
Yeah,
but, you know, so they do know. And I take them as Mrs. Illinois. I've been taking them on some of the appearances and events that I've been a part of, and they've had a great time with it. But they also have their own thing. They love animals. We have horses. We had a cat, but he passed away. And so for them, they like to do stuff for animals. So I try to have them do things that they enjoy doing for what they're passionate about at their age, so that they also understand that this is what I do, because this is what I feel is very important. And so I hope that it will, you know, in the long run, when they become adults, I really hope that they'll continue doing their public service, their community service.
Well, that's really nice to hear and refreshing to hear. And I know here in Falmouth, Maine, mm-hmm. yes, it's a requirement to graduate high school. You have to do some 30 to 36 hours of community service just to graduate high school here. It's got to be logged on and signed off, and that's what's required. You have to do it and so forth. But my senior did way more than that. Kind of like what you're talking about, volunteering at the cat shelter. Because
yes.
we love cats. And
right.
so I totally agree with you. If you can find what they're interested in and then tie that into some type of volunteering, it's lifelong.
It is. And if you get them started early, then it doesn't feel like a requirement to graduate. It
right.
feels like something that they have to do because they want to do it. And, you know, as we know, I mean, each of us, really can be of an impact. And these organizations these days so desperately need each of us to help them because, again, the budgets are being cut. The volunteers really are going to help. And, you know, I'll tell you, even with CASA, every single year, we as volunteers, we advocate 6.5 million hours of our time every year. And if you were to put that into financial terms, we're saving taxpayers roughly $300 million a year by volunteering our time into the child welfare system. And, again, not only is it saving taxpayer money, but like in the state of Illinois, we don't get any money from the state. We're one of the few states where we are not getting any funding because we don't have it to give, but we still desperately need it. So that's where we really hope, like many organizations out there, that if you don't become a volunteer, help the organization in one way or the other because we desperately need it.
And their website, if you're interested while Amy's talking about that, is CASA for Children, CASAFORCHILDREN.org. And I just Googled CASA, and it came right up the very first one. And they're court-appointed special advocates for children, and they are really looking for people to donate or become more involved. Yeah, be a volunteer or anything. And there's a lot of children. Children provided a CASA volunteer through grant funds. There's a lot of grants.
Right.
There's a lot of grants, a lot of donations.
Right. There's a lot. And
here.
Yeah, and it's really wonderful because we do have certain guidelines in place that for so many CASA volunteers we have to then bring on a CASA manager who will help overlook those cases. And so that's a position you have to hire for and you have to pay for. It can't be volunteer. So it's one of those catch-22s. You need the money to do the training. You need the money to bring in the people who are going to be helping these kids. But it takes money. And that's kind of the bottom line. You know, and it's great for the volunteers, I'll tell you. The background for most of the people that work full-time and part-time, they're able to do this or they'll partner up with somebody else and share a case. We only handle one case at a time until it closes. And they say roughly 10 hours a month is what you'll spend on an average case, depending on the complexity of it. And, you know, you will meet with your family once a month, check in on everybody, make calls, that sort of thing. So it is a commitment to the child, but it's not something that only a person who is working, you know, in the home as like a stay-at-home mother can do. These are a lot of retirees that we've got as volunteers, but we have a lot of full-time and part-time people that have stepped forward for these kids.
Well, I can see here in reading this, it started in 1977. So this is something that's been around for a number of years. And last year, more than 77,000 CASA and Guardian and Lidem volunteers helped over 234 abused and neglected children find safe, permanent homes. I mean, that's amazing.
Yes, and, you know, we're hoping even more. It was Judge David Sukup in Seattle who he kind of felt like, I'm sitting here in this courtroom and I'm getting very little information about this child's life and I have very little time to make a decision on behalf of this child. And he was up at night worried that he was making life and death decisions without the adequate information. That's why he started CASA. He thought, we need to get some citizen volunteers that can watch over one case at a time and act as my eyes and my ears so that when they come to court, they write a court report for me, they give me a clear view of this child's life and recommendations, then I feel better about making a decision because I know that that CASA volunteer just gave me a Cliff Notes version that I need to make a decision on behalf of that child. And it's so important. And I'll tell you, even with the closing of the cases, I've had my case since I started. I've had my case for 5 years. It started with one. It now has 3 children. It's taken many twists, many turns. They've had to switch foster families. They're on their third foster family now. And they've experienced the loss of a foster parent. They've also experienced abuse at the hands of a foster parent. And now they're with a couple who is so dedicated in helping them in all their ways. And they have really, I mean, they have stepped up for these children in very difficult circumstances. I'm very proud of them. And if all goes well, they will end up closing the case because it looks like my children will be formally adopted in the fall. And
good.
You can't ask for anything more than that. It's just to know that they're going to have a fulfilling and happy life because they deserve it. They haven't had it.
Yeah, I so completely agree with you. I come from a family of a lot of children through a blended marriage, and then my parents adopted a child from birth, and he had fetal alcohol syndrome that we knew we were, you know, adopting him with fetal alcohol syndrome. And so I know what it's like to be a foster family. I know, I just know how, and there was no abuse or neglect or anything going on in our family. And so, thank goodness, Justin's had a great, you know, a great life in our family and so forth. But you hear on the sidelines stories of what other people are going through and stuff, and
absolutely,
they go through a lot. How do you do you stay in touch with them their whole life?
So you're technically not supposed to. Once the case closes, you're done. But again, it depends on the age of the child. My children in my case are young. So I likely won't stay in touch with them. The parents may stay in contact with me if they want to, but it's really kind of up to them. Some people will stay in contact with children who have aged out of the system. A lot of times they'll age out at 18. We can petition the court to have the services that they need continued through 21. And they're starting some new programs through CASA, too, that will better assist the older youth that we work with that are soon to age out of the system by giving them, like, the work background, the social backgrounds that they need just to try to prepare them for life on their own if they haven't been adopted or if they haven't been able to return to their families. So for us, you're not supposed to, but I have heard from some of my friends who are advocates that they have, and that's just basically because the children that they represented were almost of adult age and able to make that decision themselves.
Yeah, it's probably a bond reform. Now, here we're going to shift gears again. Eamon Gregorio, I have that Mrs. International crown placed upon your head on July 20th.
Let's 20th,
say,
yes.
Okay, let's say they that's a big crown, too. Let's say they put that on your beautiful. It's a big crown. What are you going to do?
You know, it's like
other
kind of where do you begin? Because it sounds like a long time. It's 12 months, but it's not. And I've had the chance to actually talk with some of the former national or international title holders. And you really have to hit the ground running. So for me, I have already established global partnerships with like-minded organizations such as CASA that they're dealing with abuse in other countries that may involve like child trafficking or child exploitation on a different level than we deal with it. And so I've been able to already establish partnerships with different types of agencies like the ISPAN, which is the International Society for the Prevention of Child Abuse and Neglect. There are other organizations like the World Health Organization that is heavily dedicated to compiling information and statistics and background. And a lot of that will help agencies then kind of figure out a new approach perhaps. And they've been wonderful. And, you know, there are so many different types of organizations that handle child abuse or the fallouts, or even the prevention of it. So for me, my job so far has been to establish some of those relationships, because if I were to become the next Mrs. International, I really do. I mean, I have to hit that ground with my heels on fire and get started. And there are some different seminars that are coming up that are taking place in different parts of the world that I've never been, but they're taking place. They're symposiums, and they're almost like think tanks, if you could say that. Concerning child abuse, considering, you know, the financial stresses and the poverty issues that people face and the fallout effects of that on the children, that type of thing. So there are a lot of plans I have for that. There's also, of course, we've got the Mrs. International pageant system itself and Go Red for Women, and there's so much to do with that and so many wonderful opportunities to be a part of that. And talking even with Sarah Basie, the current Mrs. International, she told me that she's awesome.
Her.
My gosh, I know. I feel like I'm like,
she's
can I just touch you? You went to Harvard? Like, wow. And But she said some of her favorite events have been through the American Heart Association and through Go Red for Women. So I look forward to all of that. And I know, as you know, too, being in pageants yourself, that with every event or every chance you have to go out and be part of something that's taking place, it's also a chance for you to spread, you know, the information you have on your platform, to create more awareness about CASA, or then to even network. You know, there's strength in numbers, and I've learned that through this year with the Prevent Child Abuse America. I was able to meet with their CEO just through an event I was part of, and we immediately just started exchanging information, and we've kept in contact because they prevent the child abuse that CASA has to then handle if it hasn't been prevented. And it's just a wonderful opportunity, and you never know when that opportunity is going to come, but when it does, you have to be ready to take it. Yeah.
You agree. I couldn't agree with you more. It's interesting how you might go with one, I'm going to use the word agenda or motive or goal or whatever in mind, and it can completely turn that over on its head, and you've done something completely different than you ever thought that you would do. Like for example, me, when I was flying from Maine to Chicago, I sat on board that plane in turbulence with my journal, and I started writing a book. I just had peace and quiet.
Inspiration.
And I'm
going
to write a book. And
because
of that experience and because of meeting some of the people I met and because of meeting Sarah Basie and all the things that pageant has done, I mean, I really credit a lot of the Mrs. International system to some of the parts of my book. Because, I mean, I started writing it on route, and I couldn't put my journal down the whole time I was there. It was really funny. Because
you have to listen to yourself, you know?
Well, I did, yeah. And I got there, and I really knew in my heart of hearts I was not winning that. I went with a totally different goal in mind. I'm like, I'm going to meet some cool people. It's going to be a fun break from being in a house, in my frat house with five boys. I'm going to put on some heels, get my hair done.
It's a break.
Mrs. Texas.
Yes.
Mrs. Texas.
Yes.
Angelina. She completely did my hair and makeup the whole time I was there. Like another pageant contestant was like, sweetheart, come here. Let me fix your hair and do your makeup. And she did my hair before she even did her own. She was so cool. Yeah.
The women really are they're very giving. I mean, we've all been in these heels before, whether it's, you know, through our state pageants or just getting prepared. And, you know, we now with Facebook, we even have a private page for all the contestants. And everyone has been so helpful and so supportive to one another, whether it's the loss of a family member or just a general question about, you know, alterations or, you know, who is going to be getting a roommate. And it's really been lovely to have those relationships kind of started and to know that we're heading into a really wonderful time. And as you said, only one person is going to be given the job. Granted, we'd all love to have it, but in the end of it, you really want to have a wonderful time as well, because you take those memories with you. So whatever happens at the end of Saturday night, it really is about the journey along the way, for me at least.
Yeah,
you know?
I couldn't agree with you more. And meeting people, and I really found myself just more so listening to what other people were saying and having to say. I just kind of sat back, and I'm like, oh, that is so cool that you do that. Or, you know, how neat is it that you do that too? And I've had some wonderful guests come on the show from the pageant. Like Melissa Willing was there, and she's a stroke survivor. I mean, I've had a ton of people from that experience come forward on here, and it's just been so much fun. And so I'm so glad you're going there. And you're not going to tell me what color your gown is, are you?
Can you believe it? I am not even. My gown isn't here yet. I don't even know what color it's going to be. Yeah, no, it's not here yet. The last I heard was, I think there was a little bit of a delay with the people who are making it. It's, I don't know. It's supposed to be arriving to them today, maybe. And I think they're going to then send it directly to me. But they, you know, they've all been wonderful, and it happens, and you hope it fits. And if it doesn't, then you figure it out and you go in a different direction, whatever. But yeah, I'm excited. Nobody really knows what my dress looks like because I had it sent in to me to even try. I never even went to a shop to try it on. It was sent to me to try. I loved it. It was totally different than what I normally wear. And so I put it back in the box, sent it back out, and said, okay, let's do it. And that was like in the beginning of April. So I barely remember myself what it looks like, but I do remember thinking that it was cool. You know, I love that part, though. I love seeing all those gowns. They're like hanging pieces of art. They're beautiful.
Oh, they're beautiful. It was so fun to see you know, I didn't have that cool clothes because, you know, I kind of had my own stuff. And even Melissa's willing. She sent me, like, three things to wear. And, I mean, I went on borrowed clothes even.
Yeah.
It was so much fun. Even, I think, Deanna Lynch, she gave me socks while I was there. She's like, you need different socks.
You just kind of mix and you match and you do what you can.
So
I mean, I can tell you. A lot of my wardrobe, some of my wardrobe that I've got, I pulled out of my closet, and I was like, wow, like, I could still get away wearing this. Like, it's still not completely out of trend. But, you know, or you go to a wedding, and then suddenly you whip that back out and say, I can wear that again.
Yeah.
So it is. It's hard because international really is known to be quite glamorous, quite, I guess you could say, fashion forward. And that's always fun to see what everybody's wearing. And that's going to be – isn't that the best? It's just fun just to see everybody all dressed up.
It's for me, it was just such a nice break from sweatpants on my hair and this funky bun on top of my head.
Right.
You know what I mean?
No, I'm not kidding you. Like, I'm used to running around in tennis shoes and running from here and there, and then when I wear heels, I do. But now when you have to wear different heels every day, I'm like, there's a lot of wear and tear on your feet. So I've actually tried to break in a pair of my shoes, but I'll take them downstairs and I'll get on the treadmill and walk for like 15-20 minutes just as a way to try to break them in. Because there's nothing worse than blisters. I mean, that just will take you down. So,
I've never had my feet hurt so bad. That's why I thought, like, if they crowned you, your first response was going to be like, I'm going to take off my shoes. But I don't.
But maybe not, because if you take them off, you're probably not going to get them back on.
Put
you know.
Them
back on. Boom. Yeah. So it's exciting.
One way or another, I knew we'd circle around to shoes because I am a complete shoe hound. And
are you?
That's funny. Oh gosh.
Well, what
yeah,
size
totally.
Are you? You don't happen to be a 7.5.
I am a 7.5, so if you have any shoes you don't want, you can borrow me a pair.
I've had to buy a lot of them recently, so if you've got any that you think would be really cool, just ship them my way.
Yeah. Oh, funny.
But, yeah.
Yep, fellow shoe hounds. Well, you know, and it's not a conversation about pageants without talking about shoes and clothes. I'm sorry, but, you know, yes. So we're ending
with a little bit
of
everything.
We've talked a pretty serious amount about your platform and everything.
Absolutely.
And so we're having a little bit of light fun here, but let's just let it be known that we're very serious and things like that, but we're having kind of a fun shoe conversation.
Well, with such serious topics, you do have to kind of find a little bit of light because it can be very difficult at the end of the day. It can be very challenging. And so, you know, with anything in life, you have to figure out a way to keep yourself balanced.
And shoes are a great way. Go, you know, keep me away from Macy's with the credit card.
Yes.
Very funny.
Exactly.
So 3 minutes left. Let's go. What do you want to talk about just with 3 minutes left? We probably should go through your website one more time. It's amygregorio.com. It's AmyGregorio.com. And then there's also the Mrs. International website.
Mrs.
International, MrsInternational.com. And then you can find Mrs. International on Twitter at INTL Pageants. So you can tweet them. Let me check. I want to check my Twitter here. Just make sure we don't have – let me just see. Make sure – because there were people asking you questions here. I want to make sure
I follow you on Twitter,
questions.
By the way.
Well, somebody wants to know, do you have a single sister? There you go. Steven?
Yeah.
Maggie's
now. No, but I do have fun. I do have some great friends, you know, but that are single. But yeah, no,
I love
that's
it.
So funny. That's funny.
Hilarious. Okay, yeah. So they're tweeting us. Let's see. Somebody, there's a dress comment. They want to know what color. I knew people would ask that. What color is your dress? So I tried to get it out of her, guys, but she's not telling us
I know.
What color dress
you know,
is.
Normally I'm like, who? I'm like, kind of like, you know, what's the big deal? Just tell a person what your gown color is. But then everybody's like, no, you want the big reveal on stage. And I'm like, okay. Like,
yeah, you should.
I
you
guess
should
then
that.
I'll just, I won't blow it. But yeah, I'm pretty much an open book. So it's kind of difficult to not just, you know, give it all away.
Well, good luck from all of us. We're rooting for you, and
it's fun
to see how you do. And let me ask you this: if you don't win, what will you do?
Well, I'll continue being Mrs. Illinois International. You know, there are already events that are in the works that are coming up. I'm actually helping organize a new run for CASA up here that's going to be like a superheroes type of a run because we're asking people to stand up and be a voice for children, to be a hero to these children that are heroes themselves because of everything that they've survived. And so there are a lot of great events that are going to continue coming up. So you know, again, it's about the journey. It's about the lessons learned along the way and challenging yourself. So as much as I'd love to have the opportunity to take on the job of Mrs. International, sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't. And with all of the high caliber women we have coming into town,
yeah.
I'm sure whatever the judges end up deciding, it's going to be a good decision. And it's just, it's a lot of fun. And I can't thank you enough for asking me to be on the show because, as you know, you've got at least 100,000 listeners. And for every set of ears could potentially be a person who's going to step up and say, enough is enough. I'm going to take care of this, and I'm going to become a volunteer in one way or another and help what I can do, do what I can to help these children. So
yeah,
I appreciate
really
it so much.
Point. Well, I really do hope that we're well over 1 million downloads now, so I really hope people take heart. Yes, Amy's Mrs. Illinois, but she's got a huge, strong message, and I hope you heard everything she said. Please replay and share the show. And
I talk a little
kids.
Fast, so you might have to.
We're all good. So, all right. Well, thank you, and best of luck to you. I'm sure you will do beautifully well, and give everybody big hugs for me because it's a great organization.
I will, and have a wonderful birthday celebration with your son tomorrow.
Oh, it's going to be fun. All right. Take
yep.
care. Thank you so much
all right,
for
you too.
Everyone, and thank you, Amy, for being with us. Take care,
thank
everybody.
You.
Have a great day. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You Show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.